It's also about like turning off your mind at some point, because otherwise you can't do anything apart from running then.
Hello and welcome back to TBR. Today we welcome back German international athlete Robert Farkan. A member of OAC Europe, Robert joined us earlier in the year as we looked ahead to the On Track Night series. After a promising start to his season, unfortunately, injury cut it short. Robert used this as an opportunity to take part in one of the toughest gravel races in Europe, Badlands. Badlands is an unsupported ultra-cycling gravel race, which is over 800 kilometers long with 16,000 meters of elevation, taking in some of the most incredible landscapes in southern Spain. In this conversation, we hear about that experience from a runner's perspective and what he's taking from it as he returns and looks ahead to Paris next year. Let's get into the interview. Robert, welcome back to the podcast. Really lovely to have you back on again. Thank you so much for joining me. Last time we chatted, it was in St. Moritz. You were in the midst of training. We were talking about the On Track Nights and getting ready to prepare for them, but unfortunately, it didn't quite work out that way. I remember you messaged me saying that you had a bit of a niggle. I mean, first off, how are you and what happened and how did your sort of season play out in the end?
First of all, thanks for inviting me again. And it's great to be back on the podcast, even when it's a different topic this time. Yeah, I mean, obviously the season didn't go as planned and I couldn't compete in more races than in two races, at least. Better than last season. Last season, I had no races. this season, I had two PBs, 145 and 332. So decent season.
Yeah.
yeah, and not two wins, but one second place and one win. So also not too bad. But yeah, definitely I was hoping for a full year of racing, being healthy. That's the main thing for all of us athletes. So that was pretty disappointing that I had health problems once again. Yeah, I was struggling with some Achilles problems with both of my Achilles. Probably it came from the fact that I didn't run in spikes since March 2022. And then I just started running in spikes in middle of May this year, so 2 weeks before the races started. So yeah, that was probably not too smart because I didn't give my body the time to adapt to the pretty aggressive carbon spikes, So yeah, I got the Achilles inflamed, and so both of them. And yeah, I was struggling in training. I tried to kept running, kept going a bit. Like, it's every time the same when you're starting to have an injury, you're still trying to find a way where you can keep training and get away with it. But yeah, it obviously didn't work out. And yeah, I was canceling race by race and thinking, okay, in 2 weeks I'm back racing, then in 10 days I'm back racing. And at some point it was just so bad that we had a moment in training. I was doing some 400 meter reps with Luke McCann in St. Moritz. And I was like, why is it was like halfway in the workout. And I was like, what is Luke doing? Why is he running into my back, into my heels? And I was turning around and he was like, there was a gap of 2 meters. So he wasn't running into my heels. It was my Achilles that started to pop.
So you thought, so it was that painful. You thought Luke was clipping your heels as you were doing a rep.
Yeah. Yeah. That was pretty painful. And then when I saw that there was a small gap, I was like, okay, fuck, that's not Luke. That's my Achilles. And yeah, I stopped the workout then and went to the doctor, and he was really, really afraid that the Achilles is fully ruptured, because he said, okay, if you have this feeling, that's normally the way an Achilles gets a rupture. But it was just really a small part rupture in the right Achilles. I had luck in this bad situation, came away with just a small injury. But yeah, then I had to stop running or not run for 8 weeks in the end.
That's got to be hard to sort of swallow midway through a season, especially like you say, with, you know, the sort of early signs of the training having paid dividends with those performances that you were talking about. And we were chatting just before we hit record, you decided to stay in St Moritz. And then obviously, you know, with when it comes to injuries, a lot of people start, they jump on the cross training, they jump on the bike and stuff like that. Where did the idea for you to take on something like Badlands, when did that idea form in your head? Was it during that period of staying in St Moritz and being on the bike, or was it something that you'd already maybe thought about and had on your kind of bucket list of things you wanted to do?
I'm actually cross training a lot anyway, so I have a good, I'm really into cycling, into triathlon and this stuff, so I know about all these events taking place, when they are and where they are. And so I'm pretty much also in the cycling or gravel or triathlon bubble.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking about competing at Badlands already in, I think it was December or January, where a mate of mine, Patrick, told me he's going to ride there. I would love to do this. Let's check the dates. I was checking the dates and saw, okay, beginning of September, there's still races that are on. And so I was like, okay, sorry, mate, I cannot come. I'm not riding then. And when I was telling him about the injury, he was like, okay, come on then, let's ride Badlands with me. I was like, oh, actually a great idea. Okay. But it was pretty difficult to get in there because there are only around 300 riders allowed, and more than 3,000 riders try to get into the race. So we had to ask the people who are working for Badlands, who are hosting this event, is there an option that I could still ride there? And yeah, they were like, okay, for an Olympic athlete, we can make a special case because it also opens their bubble. More people get hear about Badlands. And yeah, the audience is maybe getting a bit bigger for them as well. And so it was a win-win then. And they allowed me to compete. Yeah, then this experience started.
Well, you say the word experience, and I think just to go back to your earlier point, and this is why I originally reached out to you, because I think it is really interesting, you know, even looking at your Instagram feed sort of post pre-Badlands and leading up to Badlands, to see someone who is an Olympic level running athlete to be suddenly be thinking all about bikes and stuff like that. I think it's really interesting, that thing of crossing the streams and you know, looking at those two different bubbles, as you call them. But yeah, when it comes to experiences, Badlands is definitely up there. So we've got sort of a 750 kilometer course with, is it collectively about 15,000 meters of elevation throughout? And it's all taking place in Spain, right?
Yep. Sierra Nevada, Gorafa Desert, around this area, also to the coast in Spain, like pretty much, it felt like the whole country. I've seen the whole country. That's how it felt like. Yeah, it was 759 kilometers and 15,000, I think 500 meters of climbing. Yeah.
Had you ever done a cycle race that long before?
No, I never did a cycling race before. And I also never rode my bike longer than 5 hours.
Wow. Okay. So what was when you committed there with your friend to do it, what was the sort of preparation? How long did you have to prepare and how did you prepare? Because I think another thing to factor into this Badlands is it's fully self-supported, right? You bring everything with you.
Yeah. So the preparation for Badlands wasn't really a preparation for Badlands. It was more like a finding a way to stay fit, to still try to improve the basic endurance level or to hold it, and also to do some work in the gym to help the Achilles to recover. So it was, the focus was definitely more on holding the level, improving the endurance level, and not on preparing the Badlands race. Because I mean, how do you prepare for a 700 kilometer race?
You just survive it, right? You just survive it.
Yeah, basically, I was just sitting on the bike every day for 3 to 4 hours, or going into the pool for some swims, aqua jogs, basic endurance stuff. Also doing some thresholds on the bike, but yeah, no nothing longer than, okay, I had one day where I did a 7 hour ride. That was the longest then, but yeah, the other workouts were like 2 to 3 hours.
And what did your OAC Europe teammates think of you taking this challenge on? Like when you're talking to like Luke or George or the rest of the team, what did they make of you doing something like this?
So Tom was a bit jealous. He was like, that's actually class. I would love to do this. George was just really neutral. Just like, yeah, good. Do it. Cool. Like just how he is.
Mm.
And for example, Luke, he was just like, bro, you're mental. What are you doing? Why? What? How?
Oh, I love it. I love it. So
Marta, who is who is from Spain, she was following the race because she knows the areas and knows the race. And her boyfriend's also really into cycling. They were following my GPS tracker and sending me some messages. And I was sending them pictures from my bocadillos, like baguettes with ham and tomato.
I love that. All right, look, well, I imagine the nutrition is a huge part of it. So talk us through the event then. Like, I mean, so, like how long, because you can only do it, I was sort of getting my head to grips with the rules. You can only do it either solo or in a pair, right?
Yeah.
And you're not allowed to do any sort of drafting or anything like that. You've got to keep this GPS sort of satellite location on for the whole time so that they can track you. It just sounds extraordinary. And some of the locations that you traverse, I mean, it's like deserts and mountains. It's like sort of every kind of terrain possible. I mean, yeah, how did it play out for you? What was your experience? And were there any moments where things got a little bit sort of sketchy as well?
So I don't know. I don't really know where to start because there's so many things to tell. But probably we start with, when we arrived in Spain, we just arrived and we didn't really prepare anything. We just arrived there and we had everything new. Everyone had a new bike. Everyone had new bags for the bike. And no one of us sort of, I was, okay, the situation was, I had two friends with me, Patrick, who got me into the race, and his partner, who he was riding with, Pascal. And yeah, we were in a group of like us three boys, living together in the hotel and sharing the hotel room and all this stuff. We were just one day before, we were preparing the bikes and the bags on the bike, and we just realized, okay, it's pretty difficult to get all our stuff that we wanted to bring to fit all this stuff in the bags. And then we found out, okay, we're not bringing everything that we thought we would bring on the race. So and then in the morning of the race, we almost missed the start because we went to the start line too late. But yeah, we made it just in time. Eight in the morning, we started with 300 other riders.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, it would have been really smart to start easy because it's a long race and it will take a long time. And yeah, the best tactics is just like, in my opinion, is just like, okay, go easy, take your time, but just go long. Just make a really long ride, sit on the bike every day for 15, 16 hours. Don't sleep too much, just sleep a bit, but go low intensity when you are on the bike. That was exactly what we didn't do. We pushed straight away from the start. We were in the first 40, 30 guys, like really ahead of the race, and were pushing the whole day. And it was raining on day one. So it was not as expected. Everyone expected hot conditions and really, really dry air. But it was raining, it was muddy, and it was also cold. We had like 11 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
And there was very unexpected. So I struggled a bit with that. And I also got some, like when it's really heavy rain on the bike and you're riding behind someone, you get all the mud in the face, also in the mouth, which turned out to be really bad for my stomach in day two then. But first, Patrick had a crash at kilometer, I think it was kilometer 170 or something. He fell into some cliff, like really like 3 meters down.
Oh my God.
Because he slipped in a puddle.
Right.
Yeah, and then he fell off this small cliff. And yeah, luckily he had nothing. No major injuries, which was very lucky, because from behind it looked really bad. In my mind, I was like, oh fuck, this is gonna need a helicopter.
And for you as well, like as a sort of elite professional athlete, when you're seeing stuff like that, do you instantly think like, what am I doing? Like, this is as much of an adventure. Like, what if I fall off and I snap my leg or something like that? And then, you know, the next, you know, because there's a certain event that's happening next year as well.
Yeah.
Do those thoughts go through your mind?
Yeah, at some points they were going through my mind, but it's also about like turning off your mind at some points, because otherwise you can't do anything apart from running then.
Mm.
I mean, there are always moments where things can happen in cycling, also in running or in normal all day life. Yeah. There are always risks. I was definitely riding carefully downhills. I was taking it easy most of the time. Or for example, in the last night, before I reached the finish line, I was so tired 20 kilometers before the finish line. It was 2 a.m. in the morning. And I was so tired, and I hear it from the other riders, the last 20 kilometers are really heavy gravel, big gravel, difficult to ride, very dangerous descents, very dangerous downhill bits. And I just decided, okay, I'm so tired. I'm not sure if I can do it this night, because it will take, for 20 kilometers, it will take probably 2 hours in the middle of the night. So I decided, okay, no, I'm not taking this risk. In the end, I'm crashing and I'm laying there, and yeah.
Yeah.
So I had to decide wisely then, and yeah, then I just finished in the next morning. But yeah, Patrick crashed at this point. He had no major injuries, but his handlebars broke. So he couldn't continue. He had to stop the race then.
He was out of the race then. I mean, mm-hmm. God, it's just extraordinary, all these things that you kind of challenge, and just with your kind of runner's head on, I mean, thinking at it from a kind of runner's perspective and going into this sort of endurance event that the time cut off is 5 days. How long did it take you to do it in total? What was the total time?
It took me 3 days and 20 hours, I think.
I mean, did part of you think, what if I was running this? Like, is this the beginning? Are you laying the foundations of an ultra career down the line?
I was telling myself the whole race, I was telling myself, if someone's going to ask you, could you recommend this race or not? I'm going to tell him, I cannot recommend, don't do it. It's not fun. It's not cool. It's just horrible. That was my plan for the whole race, to tell everyone, don't do it. But now, yeah, 2 weeks after, I would say, yeah, guys, do it. Cool.
What do you think you took from the experience? Like, obviously you were clearly challenged, you know, you had a friend drop out, handlebars break, quite a sketchy crash, you had stomach issues after ingesting mud from the other riders being sort of kicked up into your face. Like, what have you sort of taken from the experience that you might carry into your running, because you're starting back running now, your injury sort of subsided? What are you taking from the Badlands?
So I'm pretty sure, like, when I'm going to training camps in Dahlstrom and I have really heavy and sore legs and I have a, I don't know, 20K run, Sunday long run on the schedule, and I'm 5K in, I feel like, oh, I'm actually so tired already. And I will probably be like, oh, just 15K, it's just 1 hour to go. I'm basically there. It's nothing. Yeah, because some mornings I was into the ride for 3 hours and I didn't even realize I'm on the bike for 3 hours already, because time went by so quickly. And I think I definitely changed the my zones of pain
I see. Like what you, yeah, like because your perception of like time and endurance must have changed. Yeah. Like you say, like 3 hours on the bike seeming like nothing. So only an hour left in a 20K run is like, it's all relative, isn't it? You sort of your sort of relativity to suffering changes when you push yourself in something like this. I mean, obviously next year you're going to be wanting to do, you know, to compete at the highest highs for running, but we're talking about cycling here. Would you ever do something like this again if the opportunity presented itself?
same thing with recommendation. I plan to never do this again for the whole race. I was like, no, this, I finished this thing and then I'm never doing it again. And now I'm like, there are this race and that race. Maybe I could next off season, maybe I could do it then. Let's see if the dates will fit into the schedule. But yeah, I'm definitely open to do something like this again. But right now I'm happy to be running again and to not sit on the gravel bike right now.
how is the running? How has the return to running been for you?
Pretty good, actually. I mean, the first runs, they are always difficult. You feel like you're running for the first time and you feel like an absolute hobby athlete, a hobby runner. Took me like, I don't know, 1 week or 5 to 6 runs to get into a normal feeling. And now I just did my first longer run yesterday, where I joined Patrick on his Berlin marathon. He was running the marathon, 256 marathon. And I joined him for 16 kilometers, paced him 4:08, perfect pacing. And it feels good to be back running now. And yeah, I expected it to be hard for the first, even for the first 2 weeks, I expected it to be very difficult to get back to it. Also after 8 weeks of a break from running. But yeah, it turned out to be really good. No, of course, with the Achilles, tendons in general, it's different to bone injuries. Yeah, with a bone injury, you just have some certain point where you just don't have pain anymore. Mm-hmm. And with a tendon, it's different. You have this, when it's adapting to the impact of running, you still have a pretty weird feeling sometimes, or in the morning you have a really tight feeling there. And yeah, but I expected to spoke to the physiotherapists and doctors and who prepared me pretty well for this. So I think the progress pretty good. I'm happy with it.
That's great to hear. And you're right, tendons are, this is me sounding not like a physiotherapist, but they're a pain in the ass because there's no rhyme or reason to it. Like a bone break, like you say, is a bone break, and it's 8-12, it's a fixed period, and then you're good to go, or you build back slowly. But tendons are a difficult thing. Interesting, the marathon pacing. I mean, you know, Badlands, also an endurance thing. I'm just sort of painting your future, you know, taking the endurance.
Oh, that's the thing.
I Berlin 2024.
Ultra guy or something like this. I'm just getting into this. I don't know why.
Let's put the marathon on ice. You've got plenty of time for that. Let's stick to the track for now. But what does the winter sort of season look like for you building back? Will it be just sort of base building? Will you be doing any sort of cross country, or will it be, what does it look like for you?
So the last 2 years, I started to the last 2 winters, I spent so much time in South Africa, Dalstrom, and I kept increasing this time. I started with 3 weeks camps like 3 years ago or 4 years ago, and last winter I did 5 to 6 weeks each camp. And I think looking back, it was probably not the best for me to be on a training camp for such a long time and having a really intense block of training for 5 to 6 weeks. That was probably a bit too much for me, too much running volume for me. Like for example, we actually planned to do a lot of cross training even in South Africa, but as a runner, it's every time when you feel good running and you think, okay, I could do more mileage and my teammates are doing more mileage and they're running like 10 or 15 or 20 kilometers more, you're always so tempted to also do more. And yeah, that was the case for me last winter, and I wanted a bit too much in training. And that's why this winter is going to be, I'm going to make my altitude camps in South Africa, but not the long ones. I'm not going for 5 or 6 weeks to South Africa. I'm making classic three and a half weeks in November, in January, and in March. And yeah, having a classic altitude training circle. Huh? And yeah, I have to run my qualifier early for Paris.
Mm-hmm.
Because my qualifier from this year was, I don't know, 1 month too early. It was end of May, so it doesn't count for next year.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to run it at some point. I don't know yet where I'm trying to run it. Who knows, maybe I'm running indoors in Boston then. Because it's pretty quick there.
Yes, very, very quick. Yeah.
I don't know yet. I just know I have to run it pretty early to also prepare for Euros and all this stuff. But this is all far away, because the main thing is going to be staying healthy and doing everything necessary to stay healthy. And that's why I'm also reducing the length of altitude camps, to have a classic rhythm and nothing that extreme for me. That doesn't work for me, obviously.
And, you know, if you do slightly a few weeks less in the altitude camps, maybe do a gravel race, or, oh no, maybe not.
I'm pretty sure I won't. Maybe a mountain bike one.
Downhill mountain biking championships. You heard it here first. I'm curious, because we touched on this a little bit last time we spoke, but someone who is, like you said at the start, someone who is, you know, in the sort of cycling and the triathlon bubble, but obviously you compete at the highest level as a running athletic athlete. Were there things within that kind of world, within that kind of culture, like within the Badlands and within the sort of the gravel culture and stuff, that you think are really cool that could maybe cross over and translate into the running culture?
The thing is, it's difficult because, as you said, I'm in running. I'm on the highest possible level. I'm at the Olympic level. It's definitely different than the people are competing at Badlands. So the people at Badlands are amateurs, the most of them. So it's much easier to just, like, the in between the humans. When you see another rider on the course, you can have a chat and talk about everything or whatever. Yeah, you can talk about, I don't know, but with another runner who is also competing at the Olympic level, and you could face in a world's final or an Olympic final, there's like, yeah, it's a different situation, you know. It's like very competitive. So that's difficult to translate into that, but
it's not quite, yeah, the sort of the Tour de France kind of, like, the highest highs of competition. Yeah, yeah. And level. But I suppose in sort of, I don't know, like, it feels like running always looks to cycling, though, in terms of like how it presents itself or how it wants to communicate or how it's covered. I always am curious to see what other things that running can maybe not borrow, but like take from the cycling world in order to sort of elevate that sport. Because I just think it was really cool about you, you know, as someone who is at that real high of running, just switching focus and just talking about cycling for a bit, and like people not going, oh my God, why are you not talking about your running or your running, like your injury recovery? I think that was just quite refreshing to see an elite level athlete just be like, I'm really into this thing. I'm going to do it and I'm going to share it with you.
I think, for example, the biggest difference between cycling and our running is, for example, it's easy to compare yourself to another runner, because I have a 3:32 10 PB and another guy has a 3:31 25, whatever, 3:28. So it's really easy to compare. And in cycling, it's every time just about, okay, who's going to win? Who's going to be the best? And it's not about the time in the end. It's just about who's first, second, and third. So that's the biggest difference. And that's what makes it really interesting for me, to see that competition and to see these tactics around it. For example, in the 1500s, obviously, like, we have time trials every final since a few years. So yeah, it's, I would say it's not that exciting for like a cycling, like a cycling race, I would say. It's a diff, it's, I don't want to say it's not exciting, but it's a different way of excitement then. I would also say that the, that you have way more races in cycling. It's much easier to follow. You have these grand tours where they are riding every day, and they have a GC, a general classement, and or a mountain classement, where you, yeah, we have just different type of riders, and it's like so nerdy as well, huh? And I think that's a bit missing in running. We just have the classic 1500 races, or yeah, we don't. I would love to have like a World Series that like a bit more racer than a Diamond League series. I could imagine that would be really nice. Maybe also on the road miles, or doesn't even matter if it's 1300 or 2400 meters. Yeah, just races where it's about to win, and to make it a bit more interesting, because I think cycling is, from watching cycling, it's more accessible because it's on the road. You can just go out and watch it without paying for it.
Mm.
Athletics, you have to go to the stadium at this, at a certain time, and then you watch the race for 3 minutes.
Mm.
The cycling races are bigger events, I would say.
And so I
you
think
can just be on the road with all the other fans and see the riders there and passing, seeing one rider after another. And it's easier to access it. And I would say if you bring the sport to the people, bring the sport to the city, and don't run on the track for some races, I think this would help at first. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think you touched on something there. It's about more opportunities for athletes to race, I think, as well, outside of the track, and more road events, more unique kind of road events that are sort of mixing it up and making the sport more exciting, I think. And like you say, bringing it to that audience in the way that cycling has been doing for sort of many years. I mean, there is one big mass participation event that just happened that, you know, you could definitely get involved with, the Berlin Marathon, but we'll put that on ice for the time being for you. Let's get you to Paris first, eh?
Yeah. 100%. But yeah, a marathon is a pretty good example how good it works, because it was crazy when I was running there and joining my friend, and I was just, it felt like I'm running through a 16 kilometer long stadium, because there were so many people for the whole thing. You're running through a corridor of people. This is, it's crazy for the whole marathon. And I cannot imagine how Eliud Kipchoge must feel like, being the first guy running through the streets, and everyone is just going mental when they see him. That must be so cool.
Berlin 2028, I can see it now, or maybe a bit later. Mm-hmm. Who knows? Well, that feels like, go on.
Yeah, maybe not 2028, maybe 2032.
2032. Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah, you got Los Angeles first. Gosh, forgive me. You got LA to think about as well. Blimey. Gosh, who do I think I am? To be fair, this is mainly coming from me. The FOMO yesterday, like you say, just watching the crowds, the atmosphere, the women's world record. Oh my Lord. Like an insane run, Kipchoge, that atmosphere. And I think, yeah, the more we can bring that atmosphere to the track, or with more opportunities, I think the better. And, you know, the last time we spoke, we were talking about the on track nights, and I think that is a perfect kind of example of that. So final question then, to close things out, what's going to be the sort of the main takeaway for you from your Badlands experience that you're going to be sort of, using in your running going forward, as you kind of recover from your injury and look to get your qualifying time for the Olympics next year?
So first of all, I'm not really afraid of not qualifying for the games, because also this year the preparation didn't go so well. I started running I had a break of running for a few weeks in February and March, also in the beginning of April, and I just started back running in the middle of April, and then I ran quick in the end of May. So I'm pretty confident that I can, if I stay healthy, I can run really well next summer. But I would, so I have to go back for this, to the how Badlands went in general, because on day two, as you said, I had the, after day one ended so bad with the crash from Patrick, day two started really bad with a bad stomach from me, where I had the food poisoning and I had to throw up a couple of times, which is absolutely horrible in such kind of race, because you have to fuel so much, have to eat so much. And if you cannot eat, how can you ride? How can you ride for the whole day? Because you have absolutely no energy. So I basically rode from checkpoint to checkpoint, which weren't really checkpoints, were just points where I stopped and decided, okay, I'm gonna have a nap now. Was next to the road, I was just laying down on the ground, sleeping for 30 minutes, getting back on the bike for 2 to 3 hours, having another nap. Yeah, but that was just pure, I just wanted to finish the thing. I just wanted to finish it. That was absolute only in the mind. From my body, I couldn't keep going anymore, because I was so done. But yeah, just this is, I think, a mindset. Just how bad do you want something? This is, I just realized more and more how bad I want to run well, how bad I want to run quick and to win races and to be competitive even in a final. Yeah, make a final and be competitive in that final. And this is just, I'm manifested a bit more in my head, I would say. Yeah, because I had plenty of time on the bike to think about how bad I want things. So also, for example, I had the video guy with me who was filming all the way around, and he was in the car and sometimes driving next to me. And of course, it's a bit of a mental support that you have someone, you know, okay, in any case, I can jump in the car and the race is finished, but I'm safe. There's nothing happening to me. Of course, this is some mental support. But on the other hand, it was also really, really tempting to just say, okay, I can't. I give up now. I jump in the car and this thing is finished. Mm. That was so tempting. And that was a really big challenge to just not give up then. So that was, I would say that was more of a challenge than just finishing it. That was the bigger challenge, and to refuse to give up, yeah.
I love that. And I didn't realize you had someone accompanying you with a camera, but I think I would probably agree, is seeing the back of a car, nice and cozy, a back seat, you know, an easy route home in the midst of this 3-day 750K onslaught, especially with nothing in you after losing everything, you know, from stomach issues on day two. I think that would definitely underline how bad you wanted something. And I think that's a really, a really interesting like mindset to have like garnered from that, that you're going to cross over into your running. And I think that's what's so lovely about this experience and your perspective of it as a runner, and taking that experience from a cycling event and bringing it into your running, I think is a really lovely perspective to share, and feels like a good note to end this conversation on. Robert, I'm so buzzed that you're back running again. Really excited to see you sort of training again. And thank you for coming on, sharing your Badlands experience. Maybe you're not going to be doing it anytime soon, but you've definitely taken something from it. But yeah, thank you for coming on and being such a brilliant, brilliant guest on The Big Run.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Thank you so much, Danny.
A big thank you to Robert for coming on the show. Badlands sounds like an incredible adventure. I'll put the link to the race in today's show notes, and you can check it out for yourself and check out some of the incredible scenery that Robert was cycling through. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you are enjoying the podcast. Please do leave us a review from wherever you get your episodes from. It really helps the show. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll see you next time on The Big Run.